and welcome to Cruisin' for a Reviewsin', the podcast where I get a friend to watch a Tom Cruise movie they've never seen before and then review it with me. I'm your host, Carl Westworth, and I'm rejoined by Ben to finish our review of The Colour of Money.
Hey.
Thanks for coming back.
Thank you. I physically didn't move out of the chair, but it is lovely to be here a second time.
Nice. We have been reviewing The Colour of Money. We got a long way through the movie, but we decided to do a two-parter because a lot happens in like the last third of the movie,
I guess it is. It's a very dramatic last third compared to like the tone of the movie changes completely.
Because you think the whole movie's just going to be old mate teaching old mate to play pool and makes lots of money in Atlantic City. And then everything just kind of changes at one point for reasons we're about to get into. So if you haven't listened to last week's episode, you probably should, because unless you're very, very familiar with The Colour of Money, you have no idea what's going on. The last thing that happened was that Vincent was playing the Grady Seasons character, who is very, very good at pool, very famously good at pool, known as like the most successful one in the region, I don't know. And he's meant to lose so that his odds in Atlantic City will be better against him. But Vincent is a cocky prick and ends up winning and ruining that plan and not listening. So Eddie is pretty ticked off that Vincent wouldn't listen to him. So he decides to go out and play some pool himself. And he's playing in the pool hall and he puts like a large bill on the corner and someone watching is like, go call, what's his face? Like, I think we got a sucker here. Yeah, so he plays a couple of small-time guys who are fine, but he wins against them. He's like getting his groove back. And then we introduced to a new character called Amos, played by a very, very young Forrest Whitaker, who starts playing with him. Basically, we find out pretty quickly that Forrest Whitaker is a hustler, but he is incredible at his job because he completely fools Eddie. It's not until the end when, you know, he's winning really humbly. Like, he's like, oh my God, that was such a lucky shot. I can't believe it. Oh, I'm so sorry to take your money. I feel like such a big jerk. And then that's it. He's like, you're a hustler, aren't you? He's like, no, not me. And yeah, he's hustled him out of this money, but he played it so well that the ultimate hustler did not see it even for one second.
It's pretty brutal. Like, it just because the build up to that scene has him, you know, playing and winning a couple of games and like they're friendly games. I think the guy with the insane mustache that he beats is meant to be someone from The Hustler. It was just the impression that I got from the scene that he has played against before. Yeah. But, you know, they have a friendly back and forth. They're buying each other drinks. It's you're meant to be like, oh, he's getting back into his groove again. He's good at it. Then he's having a couple of drinks. The way that Amos character is set up, he's casting himself as like this insane person who is an idiot. And you're like meant to watch it and be like, oh, what a weird dude.
Because he's like, I made money by being a subject in a psych ward, like and things like that. Like he's doing what they're trying to do with Vincent, but actually successfully.
Yeah.
And hustles him out of money and it breaks Eddie's heart. He's kind of like, I can't believe. Like it's like the ultimate con artist being conned himself out of all his money. Like it'd be real kick in the pants.
And the way he does it as well, that like, because, you know, he asks him a couple of times, are you a hustler? And the first time he's like, oh, look, you know what? You keep the money. Don't even worry about it, which is somehow worse.
Yeah.
And then asks him again. And then like the mask just drops instantly. And the guy's just looking at him with like so much pity and condescension.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's brutal. You genuinely start feeling for the Paul Newman character who like before the real only like moments of weakness he'd had, where you get this idea of the character as someone who is very, very full of pride and is struggling to remain relevant, is how embarrassed he is about the warehouse thing where he goes to the place that's not a pool hall anymore.
And that's just like he's been out of the loop so long that he didn't know that wasn't a thing anymore.
Yeah.
Whereas this is like, no, you're so out of the loop, you're shit at what you do. Like your entire thing that made you famous in the first movie is irrelevant because this young guy here has fucking got you good. But it seems to light a fire under his ass, I guess, because he goes back to the pool hall. Oh, no, he actually tells them, like, I'm done. How much money do you need to get to Atlantic City? I don't want to, you've got 3 more weeks. Do what you need to do. He's like $3,000 or whatever. And they have a big argument. Carmen's like, you're just going to ditch us. And he's like, yep, here's the money. Vincent has a nice big tantrum where he like rips off a banister and everything and like hurls the fucking Balabushka down the stairs and everything.
Like tries to, but then half drops it. And then when it's on the floor, he like punches it. Like it's such a good, like frustrated, inarticulate
it's
rage.
It's how we all actually, like we think we're going to be really good and have a good like tantrum. And it's just us clumsy. Knocking things over. Really embarrassing. And they storm off and so Eddie's like, I'm done with it. But I guess what the realization here is he's like, I don't want to end it on that. I don't want to be like, I got duped really bad. Oh, it's because Vincent actually witnessed the end of all that happening with Forrest Whitaker's character. And it's like, you just had a few too much to drink, a little few too many drinks. Like, you know, you'll get over it. You'll be fine. And he's not fine. So he ditches them and he goes back to the Chalky's place, the really rough pool hall, and starts playing and practicing. He's plays against Mosley, and I wrote down playing ugly randoms, like.
Which seems cruel, but is very true.
It's just like these are people who are not actors. They are not Hollywood in any capacity.
One of them has a tiny head. He is a largish man with a very, very small head. It is quite perplexing.
It was an excellent. It's the one woman that he plays.
Amazing.
Who is the stereotype. You expect to see her at like a Vegas casino.
Yeah.
Not in Vegas, like Atlantic City, like somewhere.
It's the hat she's wearing.
Yeah, the little visor and like a bum bag and everything. He's obviously planning to go to Atlantic City himself and see if he can reclaim some of his former glory. So, we go to Atlantic City, and all I thought of when I was watching that, when they walk in the boardwalk, I was like, I would love to spend a day in 1980s Atlantic City.
Oh, imagine the atmosphere. Imagine the vibe.
Just incredible. And the fashion, awful. Just all of it was awful, and I loved it.
he's got his glasses now, because as part of his montage, he works on his two biggest issues, which are his legs aren't strong enough for him to stand all the time, so he starts swimming, but he also goes to get his eyes tested, which is a hilarious thing to have in a training montage.
Yeah. And he gets this really cool dude, like, dad.
So slick.
What's that style? Like, are they aviators sort of style?
Well, they've got the joined bridge across the middle, like Elvis-style glasses.
Yeah, that's
it, and they
look
fucking sick.
And they're, tinted, so they're not just for being able to see, but also to look cool.
And they work. He looks amazing.
Yeah, like anyone else in those glasses, I've been like, you look like a fuckhead. And I'm like, Paul Newman, oh my gracious. So, his legs are good, and now his eyes are good too. Thank goodness. So he runs into Vincent and Carmen, and they are hustling hard, but they seem to have worked out a flow that works, even though they see him having a little argument about it afterwards. But they're hustling one guy really well, and they're like, all right, I'll see you in the green room at midnight. Yeah, so they've taken what they've learned from Eddie and are applying it and doing pretty well for themselves, and they kind of catch him. He's like, why don't you come to the green room? He's like, no, we've got a game tomorrow at 10 o'clock. I can't. He's like, he's kind of separating himself from them. They end up playing each other. So I guess it's like semifinals. I was trying to work out how.
Yeah.
There are so many people playing at one time.
They don't really make a big deal out of like letting you know where they are in the tournament. Have you ever seen Over the Top, the horrible Sylvester Stallone arm wrestling movie?
No, but I'm going to watch that immediately because I didn't know that existed.
It has exactly the same pacing as this movie, in that like he was once an amazing professional arm wrestler, and then he has to get back to the game so he can win his truck back to impress his son. It's a very dumb movie, but it leads up to him doing this tournament. But they restate the rules of the tournament in like every scene, so that the audience is always well aware of like who is where in the bracket, and also that it's a double elimination tournament, so you can lose twice and you're still fine, and like. I think they did that maybe because test audiences got confused that he lost and he was still like, he still got to play another game or whatever. But they just keep repeating it over and over. The announcer is always saying that, everyone's always saying it to each other. It's amazing.
Whereas in this, nothing's explained.
No, you're like, I assume there's some sort of bracketing system, but we're not really privy to it. We just know a bunch of games.
We only know that because we see it briefly up on a sport somewhere, which is when Eddie's like, oh, I'm playing against Vince at some point. I don't know if that happens because he's playing. Oh, there's one, the first guy he plays, he was like... I didn't deserve that. I'm like, get out of here.
Paul Newman would be like, is this your first time playing? It's just
he's like, I didn't
so
deserve
brutal.
That at the end. And he's like, yeah, you did. And just walks off.
So good. I guess like this is sort of the not focusing on the tournament thing sort of flows on from something that Eddie's character says earlier in the movie, that like the tournament is the secondary thing. You know, you can lose in the tournament, but then still make thousands of dollars in the green room based on people saw you lose out there. So you're going to get more people bet on you, whatever.
Mm.
It's kind of secondary until it's not, because it becomes like personal.
Yeah. And so Eddie, like at this point, losing isn't necessarily an option for him because he wants to reclaim some glory for himself, even though that's not the thing that he taught Vincent at all. Like winning at this point, a certain point, isn't the old end game. It's the end game is making heaps of money.
Yeah.
So if you purposely lose, but you still make a bunch of money, you're won. But yeah, that gets thrown out the window when Eddie's gonna make a point. They play against each other. It's all very dramatic, and Eddie's having the time of his life because Vincent is just fucking up so badly, and he manages to win. I don't know if it's like the skin of his teeth or not, but Vincent is like sort of storms off, very tantrumy about it.
Because he sort of wins on, I might be misremembering this from another scene, but is it that he like sinks the nine ball, but then it also sinks the white in the same shot or whatever, and it's by just like the thinnest margin, like just the.
He, I know it was by a very thin margin, which it, I don't remember which one it was. Fuck, I can't remember. Anyway, just kind of scrapes a win, and like he's so because he like pops outside for a second to like shout in joy.
It's so good.
He's so stoked that he, you know, beat this guy that he was teaching, and you know he feels fucking on top of the world. Meanwhile, Janelle has come to stay at him with him at the hotel, and he's told her what's happened. She's stoked for him as well. And in the hotel room, I assume fucking.
Yes, that's the implication that we're given. Because they've been having celebratory sex, that he's like, oh, we were just having a champagne.
Vincent and Carmen go to the room and are like, yeah, it was a really good game. Here's your cut. And he's like, my cut? Yeah, it's like $8,000. I basically lost against you on purpose so I can make lots of money. You know, that thing you taught me. And Eddie is like, he doesn't show it very well. Like, doesn't show it to them. So they don't really. Although I imagine Carmen probably got it.
Yeah.
But he's fucking crestfallen. Like, he thought he did such a good job and he didn't.
It's so brutal. It's genuinely upsetting. I didn't see that coming at all. Because this all happens at the end of his montage of him, like, getting his groove back. Mm. And you're like, this is fucking awesome.
And, like, it's set up very, like, established very well that Vince doesn't know how to lose very well. And he's obviously practiced it in those 3 weeks and learned how to do a really good job of it. Yeah, you wouldn't expect it. And Eddie had no idea.
And they set up the start of that scene in a particularly brutal way as well, just in that, like, they finished, well, at least he made it to look like that way, like, they finished that game where Eddie won with Vincent being pissed off at him and storming off or whatever. And you're like, ah, that sucks. And then the start, they're being super nice to each other. And you're like, ah, everything worked out in the end. And it's just bam, like, ah, no, old man, everything you were working for is a lie. You're the fucking dupe now. Like, it's so upsetting. And, like, it feels a bit like, it's hard to tell, but that could have been Vincent's way of trying to cut him down.
Yeah.
But I don't think it was. Smart. No, there's no guile behind it. He's just like, yeah, I did it. Isn't that cool? And he knows he's a better player. Whereas Eddie's just, it's fucking ruins him.
Yeah, so I think they probably thought, well, Eddie knows that I'm such a good player that, like, I think they just assumed that he would have figured it out.
Yeah.
That Eddie's too smart to have been duped like that, but it was so well done. And Eddie was so feeling so confident that he didn't pick it.
Janelle's line after that when they walk off where she says, like, oh, he's a little prick. And yeah. Like, just like, oh, fucking who cares?
Yeah, it's like, didn't you feel bad? He's a prick for doing that to you. He still gets into the final because he did beat Vincent, but he realizes he didn't get there for being the best player, which I still think it's a little bit of a gutless thing to do, is he forfeits.
Yeah.
And the poor guy wearing
the
red bandana.
Worst bandana in the world. Very strange looking man. I feel like that guy surely had to be a cameo as well, like of a pool player.
Yeah, he's like, no, I don't want to win like this, which is fair. Like, no one wants to win by default.
Yeah.
Like, the two worst words in the English language. Yeah, he just packs up his Balabushka and he goes at the back, approached by, oh no, as he leaves, as he walks out, he just hands an envelope of money back to Vincent and Carmen. He's like, don't want it, thank you. And so Carmen goes, he runs into Janelle and Janelle's like, can we fucking go to the Bahamas yet? He's like, yeah, sure. Oh, wait a minute. Carmen's coming. So Carmen comes out and is like, Vincent wants you to have the money. It's yours. Like, if you don't want it, give it to charity. And he's like, I don't want the money. I want Vincent's best game. And that's the whole thing, is that he wants to win legitimately. He wants to lose or win legitimately. Like, he wants to know where he stands. Yeah, so he just wants that final game. And, you know, the money isn't, it's not about the money. He's already a rich guy. He's rich from whiskey. He doesn't give a shit about the money.
It's sweet whiskey cash. His sweet whiskey car.
Oh, what happens at the very end? I stopped writing notes because I was too intrigued with the ending.
Well, they have the game. And Vincent keeps being like, why do you care? You taught me how to do all this. You were playing me for a fool the whole time. And he's like, yep, that's true.
Yeah.
Still, we need to settle this. And then, yeah, it shows them breaking. And then that's it. Freeze frame on Paul Newman's face.
Oh, it's a really good one. Is that where they have the shot of him reflected in the...
Oh, that's where he decides to give up, where he's looking at himself in the reflection of the ball. And then he's like, nah, I'm out.
Nah, my confidence isn't good enough for this. And also, I want to fucking Vincent to go get him. Yeah, so, and then that's how they end it, is just like, it goes to break and... the end. Nice freeze frame.
Lovely freeze frame. You don't see that anymore. They don't do that for the end of a movie.
Freeze frame could have had the swirling the end text.
That would have been nice.
That would have been perfect, but that wasn't it. And so we don't know what happened, but no matter what happens, Eddie got what he wanted. He got the final game. Because he sort of says, like, you want to kick me around like a dog for the rest of my life? Like, I've only got a few more good games in me.
Yeah, I love that line. That's so good.
This is it. We've got to finish this, and then I know. That's it. I'm done. I'm out for good this time. And, yeah, that's The Color of Money, the Martin Scorsese film with Paul Newman and Tom Cruise.
Mm.
Very, like, I don't know, just to read about it and to see, like, the cover of it, you'd be like, oh, I don't want to watch this.
Yeah.
I have absolutely no interest. But, I mean, I guess when you get a very good film director with some very good actors, like, it's going to be pretty interesting. But, yeah, I don't know. I just really enjoy this movie.
Yeah. It's, like, even if it is a by-the-numbers Scorsese movie, as, like, he claims that it is, it's still just so well put together. And it's, like, not about – it's not the narrative arc of it that makes it interesting. You're sort of watching Eddie have these changes of heart throughout the movie. You know, like he starts off and his like main goal is to get this guy because he sees some talent in him, or maybe sees some of himself in him and reckons he can do something with this.
And it was probably like an unresolved thing. Like he doesn't feel like, because he said, I was basically retired out of playing anymore, of hustling anymore. And he probably still feels like that was unresolved. Like he was taken out of it and never got to finish it the way he would have liked. And so that's probably always played in his mind.
And it seems like we're seeing that, like that's what his motivations are at the start, that he's sort of trying to resolve that. And then by the end, he's realized what really matters to him is actually just like being good at it.
Yeah.
Like it's just after all this time being like, no, actually, I just want to be a guy that's good at pool.
Yeah. Money's nice. He just wants to prove that he's as good as he was 25 years earlier. Yeah. I think, I mean, I guess it's just for any movie, like you don't have to care about the subject matter necessarily.
Yeah.
On a personal level. But if it's a good movie, like it'll draw you in no matter what. I'm not interested in car racing, but if I watch a good car racing movie, like I'm all about it. And this is the same sort of thing. Like possibly one of the most boring sports to watch.
Mm. 100%.
Apart from fucking darts or cricket, I don't know.
Darts was the first example that popped in for me.
But yeah, they did such a good job that I was intrigued. And now I want to go, I want to play pool because I know I'm bad at it, but I want to go watch people play pool.
The thing about it, it made me really want to go and play more pool immediately after I watched this. And I was reading that thing about how after The Hustler came out, there was this massive bump in pool table sales.
And even after this one,
it was still,
yeah, it happened again. Like people were just like, hell yeah. It's probably like a lot of, you know, when we were younger, parents probably had pool tables in their rumpus rooms because they watched like,
I'm going to be one of those guys. It's like how there was a massive notable drop in Merlot sales and then a massive bump in Pinot Noir sales after Sideways came out. Because everyone watched that and was like, oh, I guess you're not supposed to like Merlots then.
Merlot's like, no. Okay, so this movie, like I said, not the Tom Cruise-iest movie that of his repertoire. I mean, still excellent and still very Tom Cruise-y in some ways, I guess, because what we're going to go through now are Tom Cruise-isms, of which there are a bunch, but not also not that many. So like, obviously, we're going to talk about things like running. Mm-hmm. Very little running in this movie.
Basically none. There's a short run to the car from inside that pool hall.
Even when he's like running after the car, he runs after the car a little bit when he zooms off. That's it, but not Tom Cruise-y runs. Tom Cruise was only just getting into his Tom Cruise run around the 80s anyway. So, yeah.
I love that you can plot this on a timeline. That is tremendous. Yes, you
can. Same as his eyebrows. Like, I notice you can notice a movie. The Firm is the first movie where he doesn't have his mono brow anymore. Mm-hmm. I guess when all you do is watch Tom Cruise movies, you pick up on these things.
Yeah.
So, obviously, running's out. But you'd think, stunts. No stunts in this movie, but you'd be fucking wrong. Because Tom Cruise learned how to play pool really, really well for this movie. So I think Paul Newman did learn for The Hustler and probably still knew how to play it for this movie. But yeah, also there's a lot of trick shots, you see, and all of them but one, which is a very complicated one that Tom Cruise learned how to do. And the only reason why he didn't learn this one was because Martin Scorsese's like, that's an extra 3 days and however many dollars in production money that we'd have to spend on that, it's not worth it. So when that trick shot's done, it's just done in a way that...
It's like really awesome because it's like it's a shot from one side of the table the other where he's hopping over two other balls to get into that pocket. And so they get Tom Cruise lining the shot up. He like puts the cue into contact with the ball and then they do a very quick fucking tracking shot over to the other side that like blurs it or whatever. But apparently they had another professional pool player out of shot doing that shot at the same time so that it would be following that ball. It's wild.
And I'm sure Tom Cruise was dying that he couldn't do that. I'm sure he knows how to do it now.
Oh yeah, it's probably like years later after the movie, still obsessively practicing exactly that shot, being like, months, God, I can fucking do that shot if I wanted to.
I'm going to learn how to fly aeroplanes and do that one fucking shot I wasn't allowed to do. God damn it.
It is fascinating watching that movie and watching for all of the shots where there is like a large bit of dialogue before they take the shot or whatever as well, where you're like, because obviously you don't need to be the best pool player in the world all the time. You just need to be able to get that shot in like 20 takes or whatever so that you got one good take if you're doing it. But the ones where it includes the dialogue, you're like, God, that must have been fucking hard.
Mm.
But both of them pull off these amazingly difficult shots.
And I really like the one where it's before Newman throws his tantrum and storms off, where they're playing together and Vincent's like talking and like looking at him and then still does the shot.
Oh my God, it's so fucking smug. It's amazing. amazing.
Don't even know how to play pool. I would have been so fucking angry and like, oh, look at you. Don't even need to look, do you? Yeah, that was really good. So, yeah, stunts-wise, Tom Cruise did them.
Yeah.
He did his pool-related stunts, which, you know, don't quite match in intensity to Mission Impossible, but also probably just as difficult to learn and everything. I mean, if we're going to go through the Tom Cruise-ism of him being a young smug guy being taught by a mentor, they definitely did that. He learned a lot of things, but it was still a prick at the end of it, which is unlike.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Although I guess the very last thing that happens in the movie is him kind of learning, like, it's Paul Newman coming back to be like, no, don't be an ass. And like him meeting him on his own terms, I think is some concession to that. So he comes back around a real tiny bit, but it's literally like the last 4 seconds of the movie that happens. Up until that point, he arguably becomes a worse person.
Yeah.
Like the part where they're arguing with the guy who's staking them when they're at the tournament, you know, they're pretending that he's the naive idiot guy and she's trying to push harder for more money. And in the end, he's angry at her for not having pushed for more money.
Mm.
You're like, oh, he's actually just become more cynical and more of a prick.
Yeah. As per usual, can't remember a single other fucking Tom Cruise-ism that I would normally, one day I'll put a list out so I can go through them, but today's not that day.
Still got that one big middle tooth that's still
there.
Hey,
don't! Well, I know he, probably not because had braces and stuff since this. So I think the middle tooth was more after he had the really intense surgery in the 90s.
Oh, I feel like it's kind of visible in this one. My eye was drawn to it at all times.
The last lot of fixing actually made it more. I still don't notice it. Like, I have to really focus.
That's all I can see. It's just like one of those things where once it's been pointed out, I'm like, how?
The whole Tom Cruise thing, I'm like,
You just see like a pixelated blur where his mouth is. And the rest of it.
Perfect teeth, every single one of them. But Tom Cruise doesn't care. He wouldn't smile so fucking much if he gave a shit.
He's like the most charismatic, handsome, rich person in the world. I don't think he gives a fuck.
It's like, oh, my teeth are off center. Whatever. Also goes to show that no matter how rich you are, I guess some things can't be.
I love that. Yeah. Secretly love that. It's like Elon Musk, 20 years ago, looked like he was 30 years older than he does now.
Yeah.
But he's still an unlikable piece of shit.
Yeah.
So
no matter how rich you are, you can't get still rid look of that. Like a piece of fucking trash and, the stink would never come off, no matter how rich you are.
Thank God.
Love it. Any other things? Like, there's not even any like drunken rant. There's a nice little tantrum. Like, that's probably a Tom Cruise-ism from the 80s. Him throwing a tantrum about something and wrecking something.
Yeah, I wonder how much of that was scripted. Whether he was, the bar was set up to come off the wall. He was meant to sort of powerlessly drop the thing on the floor and then punch it or whatever.
Yeah.
It's got a very natural energy to it. In like the awkwardness of it feels so naturalistic. Yeah. You're like,
like if you tried to do that, it would have looked terrible and forced, but it looked very clumsy and natural and embarrassing for all involved. Yeah, I think that's probably it for Tom Cruise-isms. Normally we'd go straight into rating, but there's lots of facts about this movie that I really like. My main one is that Tom Cruise and Paul Newman, Paul Newman was famous for loving racing cars and everything, so he got Tom Cruise into it. But I think, hang on, when did Days of Thunder come out?
I'm not sure, actually. I didn't realize how much of Talladega Nights was taken from it. Like, there are parts where that I just note for note. I was like, oh, okay, I get it now.
And John C. Reilly's in both, isn't he? Yeah.
That's so fucking wild.
So Days of Thunder was 19. Feels like such an early 80s.
It's got such a strong 80s vibe to it.
Yeah. I mean, I think the very early 90s were even more 80s than the 80s were in some ways.
That's very true.
You know, fashion and everything.
Became quite stylized, the things
So, yeah, I think that's why Tom Cruise wanted to do Days of Thunder. Imagine they race, and I think they race Porsches or something. And like, that's real cool.
There was also that thing about how Paul Newman's racing team was like sponsored by Budweiser at the time. So the scene where they did the final tournament like scene between those two guys, after they finished that scene, Paul Newman told all the extras to stay where they were and then like came back in with like a bunch of cases of Bud and was just like, hey, Budweiser for everybody. Just
like, yay.
It's so wild.
The cue used in the film was not a genuine Balabushka, but a Joss made to look like a Balabushka. Joss is like, oh, geez, okay.
It's something so funny about that. Also, the specificity of knowing what the pool cue was that was turned into another pool cue.
Yeah.
I don't know enough about pool to understand the mechanics of all
thing,
this.
I think I said to you yesterday, it's like, I would love to be good enough at anything that I needed. There was a tool for that thing that was like so coveted and expensive and cool and whatever. That's, if I had that, everyone would know. I meant business. Like, I can't think of a single skill I could have.
It's roller skating. Many? You will be old mate.
Oh yeah, that's right. I saw those fucking $1,500 rollerblades and like they were like gold hollow and I'm like, oh.
Yeah.
Oh, there was a credit that you pointed out. There's a brief moment where you see a dog dog being walked, that dog is credited to Zoe because it is Martin Scorsese's dog, Zoe.
And they put it as the name, like...
Dog walk by? Yeah. Dog walk by?
Dog walk by. It's so cute.
like afterwards, he's like, what, you're such a good actor. Two Phil Collins songs in
yes.
this movie.
Yeah, I noticed that.
I'm like, fuck off. I don't care for Phil Collins at all.
Or the drink to Tom Collins.
Nah, especially not that. Here's a fact that no one cares about. Mary Elizabeth Mountain Scorsese shared the same birthday, November 17th. God damn these awesome. IMDb facts.
I spend so much time reading those, and like there are always a couple in there that are like useless ones like that where you're like, who gives a fuck? Or other ones where it's insane technical knowledge where they're like, technically he's driving a 1979 blah, 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 but it has the side view mirrors of a what? And you're like, what is wrong with you? Do you do this for every movie?
Like in when the second It movie came out and everyone's like, green Lego didn't exist then. And people were furious. I'm like, no one cares.
Is that real? Green Lego?
Well, like that shade of green that they had in the trailer didn't exist and everyone was real fucking mad.
Oh,
Jesus.
That's so funny.
This fact I thought made me laugh and I wanted to talk about more about it anyway. Brandon Flowers of The Killers wore a t-shirt copy of Vince t-shirt.
That is an insanely specific piece of memorabilia to own.
So I own that shirt. I got it from an 80s t-shirt.
Wait, when? Between? When did you get it?
As soon as I watched this movie.
Yeah, right.
And I was like, that shit is ridiculous. And so for when I do my Halloween challenge, was it last year, the year before? I can't remember now. So it happened once, but October 10th is Tom Cruise Day in Japan. Uh-huh. So from now on, October 10th is Tom Cruise Day to me.
Because it neatly falls within your 31
Yeah,
days
so of- I cosplayed as Vince and went and pretended to play pool once. For my photo, Ben's like, this is literally the nerdiest thing I've ever seen you do. You've done a lot of nerdy things. So.
That is true.
Yeah, but I'm very proud of that shirt. And yeah, because it wasn't until I rewatched the movie and I was like, why does he have Vince's shirt? And then I realized, it's actually a staff shirt.
Odd, right? Yeah. That like they get a new employee and they're like, oh, we have to get, what, 5 t-shirts with your name on it printed?
Like,
what
I
size
don't
are you?
I feel like that's good use of money, but I'm sure that probably was a thing. But they live up Jersey, that sort of way. I always think of, you know, what it was in. But like, it was in our Jersey Shore, the reality TV show, where a couple of them worked in a shop that they printed t-shirts to order.
Yeah,
sort of
thing.
So maybe that's a Jersey thing where everyone just has the shirts
everyone
and their names
t-shirt press.
Dumb shit on their shirts.
I was trying to figure out where they are starting from because they say it's like however many miles or whatever, like that they are a distance away from Atlantic City.
Mm.
But I couldn't figure out whereabouts that meant they actually were to start.
No idea.
I have no idea. I don't think it's important, I guess.
Probably not important, but I want to know because does it justify why they have printed t-shirts?
Yeah, that might be the local thing.
So I thought there were more facts. Oh, it's the only time where Paul Newman ever was in like a sequel or the same role. And Tom Cruise famously hasn't, except for Mission Impossible, he has only done that once for Jack Reacher.
Yeah, right.
And he's now doing it for Top Gun. But otherwise, Tom Cruise famously, except for Ethan Hunt, never played the same character twice. Made a mistake playing Jack Reacher at all, but...
Not
that's
a fan.
For a future podcast. No, I'm not a fan of, because people like didn't like that Tom Cruise is cast in that movie because he's too short for that role. Whereas I'm like, that character sucks and I hate him. So nothing to do with it. I don't give a fuck if he's the tallest man in the world played him. I still hate him. All right, so we are now ready to review the movie. I haven't thought this in advance at all, but I think I will give this movie 4 Balabushkas out of a possible 5. It's not my most hilarious choice, but I love saying Balabushka.
It's
what
so
can
good.
I say?
And they keep saying it.
Yeah.
But also, there's no explanation of why a Balabushka is valuable or why we should care about it. It's just someone saying, it's a Balabushka? Oh, it's a Balabushka. Balabushka.
And also, I want to, and they're like, Eddie gave it to you? Fast Eddie gave you a Balabushka? How does he have a Balabushka?
A Balabushka?
I also want to use that in my thing and like compare things to Balabushkas. I'm like, oh, that's almost as good as a Balabushka. Carl, what?
That's basically the Balabushka of the automotive world that you're driving there.
Oh, I can't wait to annoy everyone with that.
Literally no one is going to understand what you're talking about. It's going to
be
beautiful.
Like, this is a fucking Tom Cruise thing, Carl. I'm like, maybe.
It could be. What's it to you?
All right, Ben, what do you rate this movie?
I'm also going to go with 4. I can't think of anything I don't like about it, but you've got to give yourself some wiggle room at the top, obviously. I'm going 4 sweaters out of 5. We didn't talk about this at all before, but this is a very sweater-heavy film, like sweater vests.
Sweater vests. So especially towards the end of the movie when they're in Atlantic City. Maybe Atlantic City, home of sweater vests. But even Vince is wearing, like Vince doesn't wear, he wears leather jackets and Vince t-shirt for the most of the movie. And at the end, he's wearing a sweater vest.
Which I think is meant to be like a Well, no, I was talking to you about this yesterday where I wasn't quite sure whether this is like a character thing that over time he's dressing more like Eddie because he's getting richer and he's trying to become more like Eddie, or it's just that those were fashionable at the time they were shooting the movie.
Yeah.
It's very hard to say.
But it also could be that, yeah, he wants to be more like Eddie, or is he just like, this is part of the hustle. I want to, people think I'm look a bit nerdier, like, or a bit, like, look a certain way. I don't know. Yeah, like, could be either way. Could
I also, all three. This is such an oddly specific detail to even notice, but I think it's also very cold because the one scene where he goes outside to like do his shout, his like victory shout before going back inside, his breath is like fogs up like immediately, like crazy. It looks like it's fogging.
Well, I know because I actually wrote this down. It was set, the Atlantic setting happened in April. So the 6 weeks leading up to it would have been, yeah, some of the coldest months. Because I think February, March is still very cold.
Imagine living in a place where it got cold.
No, I was talking about this. I was watching Ben and I'm like, who wants this? Because we were watching a show that's set The Great North, the new Bob Saget cartoon.
I'm loving The Great North.
And it's set in Alaska. So I'm like, I wonder what the temperature is like in Alaska. Their summer ranges between like was either 4 and 8 and 15 degrees Celsius.
That's just a recipe for depression.
That's a cold winter here where we live. And their winter is like minus 18 to minus 35. And I can't fathom that. Ben and I were in New York City when it was 0 degrees and we actually thought we were going to die. We had to walk around in concrete. I'm like, my feet are falling off. I lost my feet. I can't believe it.
I think the coldest I've ever been in was like negative 10. And I was like, this is like a life or death situation. And then I talked to my friends who live in like some parts of North America and they're like, no, that it gets a lot colder than that. That's not that bad.
I'm like, that's just a sweater vest weather. Yeah. The scarf.
Just one like, tasteful V-neck skirt sweater.
Ah, fuck, yeah, we are. Like, why do I live somewhere so hot? I'm like, because I can't live anywhere cold.
No, fuck, this is the perfect climate. I wouldn't live anywhere else.
It could just be, you know what, I want Brisbane weather 9 months of the year, winter weather 9 months of the year, and then Brisbane summer 2 months of the year.
Yeah, that's kind of perfect. Yeah. And then one miscellaneous month?
Yeah, just throw it out whichever way. Be great. All right, so both of us four Balabushkas and four sweater vests out of a possible five.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, nothing bad I can think about this movie.
No.
Yeah, like an unthrilling topic but made very enjoyable and very like compelling. And yeah, I guess maybe if Tom Cruise ran some more, I'd give it a five. I don't know.
Yeah, that's the other thing that it's missing. He doesn't jump from a helicopter at any point in the movie.
Nothing blows up once. Yeah, which is usually how I rate my movies. Awesome. Well, that's The Colour of Money. If you're in Australia, it's now streaming on Disney Plus, so you should watch it. I had the Blu-ray, lost it. So
that is tragic.
God. Yeah.
So how do you even lose it? How would it have even left this house?
I have a specific tub specifically for my Tom Cruise collection, and I think Ben's lent it to someone. That's
fucking typical.
Yeah, because I want to watch all the behind, like the, because I'm the only person, Ben's, my husband's very into this. I'm probably the only person left who still watches every single special feature after I watch a movie.
Oh, I love them. I'm all about them.
Yeah, I want to know everything. If I enjoy the movie, and especially if it's an action-y movie and there's stunts and things, I need to know how everything happens.
I want 2 hours of like milquetoast cast interviews where they're telling kind of funny anecdotes, but not that funny.
Yeah.
I love that. I genuinely, that's a wonderful night in for me.
Yeah, that's why streaming is all well and good, except our internet sucks and it's very hard at the moment. But I want to have a million things extra to watch when I watch my movie. Yeah, I highly recommend watching it. If you haven't ever watched it, if you don't like Tom Cruise, not a very Tom Cruise-y movie. You might better get past that with this. And you're not meant to like this character, so that's fine. Before we go, just want to ask Ben where we can find you.
Podcast Buena Vista. It is on all the places that you get podcasts from, I'm pretty sure. And that's it. I'm not really anywhere else now because I've just been kicked off Twitter.
Oh, yes. Twitter finally gotcha.
They did. Yep. Had to happen sometime.
Well, I will link to Buena Vista in the show notes. Very excellent podcast. One of the other guests is another big Tom Cruise head, and I'm going to get him on here eventually.
He will do it at the drop of a hat. I will bully him until he does it.
Fuck yeah. And yeah, if you want to find me, I haven't been kicked off Twitter because I'm shit at it, so no one gives a shit about me, except for that one time I got fucking snided. But my Twitter is Tom Cruise Review, no S on the end. On Instagram, it's Tom Cruise Reviews with an S on the end. And my website is Tom Cruise Reviews for everything else. Thank you so much for joining us. And we hope you enjoy watching Colour of Money. And we'll catch you next time.